Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io. And we're back. Another episode of Startup Hustle. Matt DeCourcy here to have another conversation. I'm hoping helps your business grow. Now, look, if you have ever purchased real estate, whether it's flipping a home, buying a building, or doing a lot of different stuff, and you realize that the whole funding process can sometimes be a bit of a pain in the butt, and there's really no other way to describe it. Now, if you, especially when it comes to flipping houses, flipping different properties, and you know, that's a whole science and something that some people are good at and some people get themselves into trouble with. And that's what we're going to talk about today. Now, much as promised, today we're going to talk about fintech lending startups. With me today, I've got Kirill Bensonoff. Kirill is the CEO and co-founder of NewSilver. They're out of Boston. Now, as far as Kirill goes, he's been a successful entrepreneur with multiple exits in the SaaS and IT service spaces. He's been an investor with a focus on fintech and IT. He's an advisor and currently the co-founder of NewSilver, a fintech private lender. They do some different stuff, some different software things, and we're going to talk all about that. Before we do that, Kirill, welcome to Startup Hustle.
Thanks for having me, Matt.
Yeah, I'm glad to have you on. This is a subject we actually did a different episode on, and that episode is quite popular. I learned quite a bit about flipping real estate properties. I knew enough to maybe get myself in trouble and enough to want to stay away from it. But before we get too far into that, why don't you give us a little info about your backstory and what brought you to where you're at with NewSilver?
Yeah, absolutely. So as you mentioned, I mean, I've done stuff in various business segments. I started out after college, founded an IT services company I ran for like a decade almost. And it was quite successful. We sold it. And then I had a software company that kind of spun out of the services company that was, just a very, very young startup, ended up getting acquired quickly. So I kind of learned different things along the way. I was a computer science major at school, but I never really wrote code. But I was always interested in building product. And so long story short, myself and my partner, Alex, we've known each other for a long time. We were both LPs, limited partners, in a fund that did this fix and flip lending prior to NewSilver. And it was always like a side thing. And it was interesting because it was generating great returns. And I just kind of liked the business model. And so after my last company, and Alex was winding down one of his projects as well, we just kind of started talking and we looked at the technology that's powering the fix and flip lenders. I mean, I can tell you quickly about the space. I mean, it's pretty fragmented. There's a good number of small lenders. There's probably hundreds of small or medium sized lenders around the country, and then there's maybe there's a couple dozen regional and national lenders, And we looked at all of those, and we tried to understand what kind of technology are they using, and is there room for improvement. And what we found was that absolutely, I mean, the technology really ranged. I mean, the majority of what the tech stack looked like on the website, if you go and try to apply for a loan, most of the smaller or medium size or even larger lenders, you essentially get a contact form. If you click on, get funded or apply for a loan, you get a contact form, you fill out that form, and then a salesperson calls you back, and then takes you through a half an hour conversation. Well, just based on my experience, in the consumer space, if you're buying a home or an apartment, you could, and you need a mortgage, you could apply and get approved within like 10 minutes, right? Like nowadays we've got like Rocket Mortgage, we've got Bank of America, a number of other lenders out there that are digital, and you can go on and get an approval or not, but you know very quickly. And we wanted to, our vision is and was at the time is to build something similar for the fix and flip space. There's certainly intricacies we can talk about, but that's our grand vision, is to make that process completely seamless for the borrower and at the same time use data to reduce risk for the lender.
So when you say fix and flip, a couple questions here. Well, one, I'd like to talk a little bit about what that actually is, but is the lending space for those transactions a separate segment than just like a regular home lending?
It is. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Lending is, I think lending has kind of matured in general, right? Anything that's mortgage secured by a real estate, residential real estate, we can leave commercial aside. Residential real estate, it's matured. I mean, if we think back a couple, decades or even less ago, a lot of the lending was done by a bank, and they held those loans on their balance sheet. I think sometime in the 90s, and I'm not the expert on this, but I believe it's sometime in the late 90s or early 2000s when securitization came along. And so the lender could then, package these loans and sell them off on secondary markets. And so I think at that time, the industry sort of shifted where even the local bank has now, instead of being a lender that holds these loans on the balance sheet for the duration, they've now become an originator, which is just somebody that's, responsible for selling and underwriting the loan. And then they sell that off to somebody else. And there's actually government entities like Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac or semi-government entities that buy up these loans, whether they're from directly from the lenders or from aggregators. So yeah, I mean, to answer your question, the lending space is different. I mean, the consumer mortgage space, the places where we live, our homes are financed by whether they're a bank or a non-bank lender, and then they're sold off typically to somebody like a Fannie Mac or Fannie or Freddie Mac. So, And in the hard money or fix and flip space, and hard money is like the kind of the old term for it, but in the fix and flip space, the traditional lenders either don't play there at all, or they may have very, very few products there. So private lenders like us have really have been the people that have helped real estate investors when they need to obtain a loan for purchasing a fix and flip property.
Okay. And one of the things that, and thanks for that explanation. One of the things that I recently learned, I was just talking to a friend that is in a similar space, was the amount of expense that goes in to just, I mean, really, like I had talked to him about all different kinds of stuff, everything from multifamily properties to commercial real estate to home lending. And there, I was shocked at the amount of cost that the lending institutions get into on their way to getting these loans out. Is that why the traditional banks aren't in that fix and flip space? Because it's such a short term, basically because they don't really make a whole lot of interest on it if that note's only held for a very short amount of time? Or why has that become such a separate segment?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. I think there's many answers there. And I may or may not be right. I've never really worked in traditional banking, but from what I understand, smaller community banks, smaller and mid-sized banks, they typically want a depository relationship that's their ultimate goal, right? They want your money held in their account so that they can use it for various activities and earn interest on it. And with the fix and flip loan, so typically when you obtain a mortgage for your home, they will force you basically to open up an account, or they'll give you a discount. They'll incentivize you to open up an account with them and a depository account with the hope that you'll put all your cash in there. With the fix and flip, yeah, because it's so short, they may or may not be able to get that relationship. And there's also, I think for a bank, there's a lot of cost involved in, in getting the loan. They're not great marketers typically. And that's why a lot of fintechs and like neobanks are popping up these days, right? Because they haven't, you know, neobanks are today, they're usually working with a traditional bank, but they're sort of the front end, right? So they build some great technology and they know how to market and they're run by entrepreneurs. And so, it's the same thing here. Banks aren't great at marketing. Their underwriting processes are typically not the best. You know, they may be not fully digital. They may be, you know, they take a long time. So that's another reason, right? It costs them a lot to bring in these loans. And I think the third one is that they don't really like construction. This is what I gathered. I talked to a bunch of folks that work in banking their whole lives. And, you know, they said they do give construction loans. Of course, it's not like they don't, but you got to have a relationship with them in order to get that loan. For fix and flip, if fix and flip, one of the other reasons I really like the business is because it's like a side hustle, right? It's like a side gig for really anybody. I mean, if you got a little bit of money and you think you see a property that you could repair yourself or with a friend, or you hire a contractor, you know, that's, you could make a lot of money that way. I mean, and so it's a great, I think, democratizing business activity that almost anyone can do and almost anywhere in the country can do. And so I think it's kind of counterintuitive for banks who like to be more local, who like to have that relationship, to kind of service these and underwrite, service and originate these short-term loans. I don't think it fits great with their business model.
Yeah. And the way that it had been explained to me was that home lending had largely become quite automated, but in certain situations, especially for like multifamily homes and commercial properties, not so much the case, because they all had different nuances about them. And I was just really surprised at learning about the amount of manual time, effort, and energy that the lenders would put into it. I mean, I'm talking in some cases, six-figure investments basically of time and energy. And, you know, that's on a local level, that can suck up the bandwidth. And I would imagine that if they're only going to hold a property for a short amount of time, I don't know, that's really not my specialty as an entrepreneur. Now, you know, when we talk about entrepreneurs, and that's one of the things that I do appreciate about house flipping, as much like you said, it is often a side hustle for people, because, you know, they'll have a regular job and they want to do a few things on the side. Maybe they're handy, maybe they know someone that is. But at the same time, there's some risk to that, because, well, I mean, you can buy a property and you think you're getting a great deal on it. Well, there's a lot of competition out there. So, you know, market rate is usually just that, exactly that, market rate. And, you know, there's not a whole lot of stuff that's floating out there for 25% below what it's really worth. You better have some kind of grasp on, the who, what, where, and when of getting things done. And, you know, like, I think some people, I've talked to people that have been on both ends of the house flipping plus and minus, meaning like, you know, hey, I've really done well with this. And then some people that are like, yeah, this is a freaking nightmare. I really underestimated how long it was going to take. And some of that's a speed game, isn't it? Like how quickly you say fix and flip. I mean, that doesn't mean holding on to it for 6 months. How do you begin to determine, you know, like you talk about the problem that any business solves? Well, you want to have speed and accuracy with your lending, but how do you give any amount of assessment to whether or not these people are making good decisions themselves, or does that even matter?
No, it's a great question. And as to your earlier points, I mean, it is a business with risk, right? And I think most businesses have risks to them, but this is certainly one that has risk. And it does take some experience. I do think the experience level may not be, you know, may not be as high as, let's say, you know, starting an app or like a e-commerce store. You know what I mean? I mean, it could be because you could essentially find the property that may be a rental or even a fix and flip where the fix is really small, right? So you may get lucky that way. You find something off market or on market that is just a great deal. You know what I mean? People do that all the time. So I do think there is risk, but I also think, you know, how do we assess that risk and whether or not is it a long-term, you know, is fix and flip like a long game? And no, it should be a short of a game as possible because it is not, you know, if you're financing it or even if you're using your own cash, I mean, there's cost to using your own cash as well. But if you're financing it, I mean, there's significant cost for interest because the capital is, you know, is not bank capital, it's private capital, and it tends to be more expensive. So if you're in the fix and flip business, you want to be able to get in, do your repairs and get out as quickly as possible. And the average for us, I think, is somewhere between 6 and 8 month hold time. And I think the typical loan term is 12 months. Some people do a little bit longer, but 12 months is typical. We've had people get out as quickly as in like a month where they had another buyer come in or something like that. But the average across the all the loans that we've done last year was about 6 to 8 months. So, and, you know, and the way we look at risk is, you know, it's not a perfect science, but we, first of all, we look at the real estate, we look at the property and we assess whether or not it's worth what the borrower thinks it's worth and whether or not there's a risk, there's a chance that may go down in the near term. And if there is, it doesn't mean we can't give a loan. It just means that we have to be more careful and adjust for that risk. And then we look at the borrower and obviously, you know, we look at how much have they done. That's kind of the first thing. How much experience do they have? And we've done a number of loans to people that have no experience. And I, from what I know, I believe they've all done really, really well. I think it's just a matter of, you know, how serious are you about it? How much research have you done? I mean, it's interesting. I mean, we do most of the stuff online, but some people send us a deck that they build. And that just speaks volumes. I mean, if somebody sends us even a short deck, 2 to 3 slides with just, you know, some information, you know, stuff they've pulled together, research they've done, I mean, that immediately tells us like, hey, this person's serious about what they're doing and they're probably going to get it done.
Now, you used the term neobank earlier, which is something I'm familiar with, but I think a lot of people listening might not be. And a neobank is basically an online bank. It's an internet only bank. So they don't have a physical branch, but they do have to have some kind of partnership I'm going to use air quotes here, a real bank, just meaning like placed with locations or FDIC, you know, insurance and stuff like that. Now, a neobank is still a real bank, but they typically, like you said, they deal with a lot of the marketing side of things, or maybe they have a slick front end that they use to connect to a regular bank. They're not necessarily providing the capital that they're loaning out. So do you fall more into a neobank where you're the connection agent to a variety of lending partners, or are you actually lending out your own capital, or maybe both?
Right. No, we're not a bank or a neobank at all. We don't use any bank capital. We don't have any bank partnerships right now on the lending side. We're strictly private, you know, private funding. So we use our own capital. We have funding sources and funding relationships with other funds. So all the funding that comes, I believe it's, you know, the vast majority of funding, and I'm not saying nobody out there has like a line of credit from a bank. I think people do. There's a few banks that finance typically a short-term warehouse line for lenders like us. But the vast majority of the longer term capital comes from private funds, where they're, you know, there's all kinds of funds. I mean, there's people that raise money overseas somewhere, they bring it into the US. There's people that raise money in the US from pension funds, you know, senior lenders, private equity. I mean, everybody has their own twist to it. A lot of people just raise from individual accredited investors, and they're able to pay out a very nice you know, yield to those investors. So yeah, most of the funding for the short term bridge loans, fix and flip loans, comes from private capital.
Now, along the way, has there been anyone, whether it be an individual or a person, an entity that has mentored or partnered with you that has made this really possible or sped things up for you?
As far as on the funding side, or
pardon,
on the finance side, or any kind of partner.
Well, I don't know, just in general. I mean, you're talking about building software, you're talking about SaaS products, you're talking about lending products, and then, you know, understanding the flip space in general.
Yeah. No, we have some great partners. I think there's two that come to mind that are very valuable to us. One is a company called Clear Capital, and they are they're not strictly in the fix and flips.
So along the way, any entrepreneur, business, you know, all of us receive mentoring, partnership, sometimes investment along the way. Is there anybody or anything that you've modeled your business off of, or people that have given you advice, mentorship, or investment that has really changed the game for you?
As far as, you know, who do we look up to? I mean, there's a number of companies that we really like. They're you know, they may or may not be somebody that we work with directly, but you know, one company that comes to mind, I think is awesome, is Clear Capital. We're actually partnered with them. I mean, they've done, I think, a tremendous job of building and bringing real estate data into sort of the modern API era, and we use their API quite extensively, and it works great. They've been a great partner. Another one that I really like is Adam Data. They are, you know, they're a data company. They've got excellent API as well, and I think they've done a lot of interesting stuff in the fix and flip and real estate investing space, as far as kind of looking at the macro level data. Then obviously I look at a ton of different companies, because I'm really big into the user experience of what an online flow or process should look like for when you're applying and doing everything else for a loan. So obviously the pioneer there was Rocket Mortgage. They were, I'm not sure if they were the first, but they're one of the first and best known for digitizing the consumer mortgage process. So I look at them, and I look at a number of different people in the companies in the lending space, and I sort of model what we're doing off of what I think that they're doing really well at.
You know, there's anytime you're going to get a loan, whether it's for your business, your startup, or to buy a home, you got to have your finances straight. And that seems like a good time to mention the sponsor of today's episode of Startup Hustle, Crown CFO. You know, a lot of businesses at different stages and sizes don't always have the budget for a CFO. And that's where offering a fractional CFO service and using a company like Crown CFO for your business can help. You can get the impact of a CFO for the fraction of a cost. You can go ahead and visit crowncfo.com/hustle. You can click the link in the show notes and learn more about them. If you want to learn more about New Silver and Kirill's business, there's also a link in the show notes to tell you more about it. Now, you know, we've talked about a lot of different stuff, the segmentation between the type of lending that you're embracing and all of this. Now, all of this required planning, and you mentioned you have an affinity for someone who presents that they have a plan. As far as your plan goes, how did you go about creating it for this type of business?
Yeah, sure. I mean, we started out in 2018. When we initially had the idea of building software, we actually initially thought about building software and being like a SaaS player in the industry and not being a lender ourselves. But then we actually looked at the lending component. We liked what was going on in the industry as far as an institutionalization of the lending space in this fix and flip marketplace. We initially built an MVP, and we went live in 2019 with an MVP, a really simple form-based mock-up of what our bigger process was going to look like. And we did a little bit of marketing, and we figured out that it seems to be working. And that's how we decided to kind of build on to spend the time and the money and the effort and build the full enchilada as far as the rest of the software and the rest of the company. So I mean, I think for me, when I plan a new business, I like to look at the market, and this is a huge market as far as the dollar of amounts go. I mean, it's hard to put an exact number on it, but somewhere between 50 and 100 million, I'm sorry, billion per year. That's just like the fix and flip, the fix and flip space. So those are people who buy and resell a property within 12 months. So if you're, it's really hard to kind of quantify, but that's probably the best that's out there. Not all of those are financed. And obviously, if you're buying for a rental use case, or if you're holding for a little bit longer than 12 months, that's not counted in there as well. So the market could, like the TAM, the total addressable market, could be, 200 billion. Some estimates put all of the properties sold in the United States, between 7% and 10% of them are bought up by real estate investors. So imagine, it's a trillion, multi-trillion dollar market, and 7% to 10% of that are real estate investors. So I that was the first thing I looked at. And then I kind of looked at, who can be a borrower, who's in the space. And like I said before, I really like the fact I'm all about helping entrepreneurs. I love it when people are able to do a side hustle and earn a little bit of money, or make it their full-time job without having to, go to, get an MBA or something like that. So I like that aspect as well, because I felt that almost anyone that has a passion for the space, and a lot of people love real estate, right? So, you don't necessarily need to have experience. I mean, if you love and have passion for the space, you could find great deals and partner with somebody if you need to, and they'll help you do the fix. And then you could either build your own team or learn to do it yourself. So that was like the second thing for me. So that was, those were the two things that I looked at. And then the third is, how can we add value with technology? There's always a tech play. I think in every single business aspect, you could always improve through technology. And I felt that, here, the obvious thing was like, okay, we can improve the lending process, the loan origination process. We can improve the risk profile. We could use more data to lower risk and things like that. But there's so many more things that we're constantly uncovering. I mean, there's the ability to kind of bring in newer technologies like cryptocurrency and crowdfunding components. There is the ability to potentially bring in institutional capital partners and build some kind of a marketplace out of this thing. So we're really at the early stages. We're going to be much more than just a loan originator. We're looking to really build a vertically integrated business that can do a lot more than just originate loans.
So, much as you mentioned, the total addressable market for what your space is, billions, and the total real estate market and lending and all that, trillions, which is, that's a crowded market space. There's a lot of people that are at war for that business in many ways. So what are you doing to differentiate yourself, to stand out, or just really something that you're hustling to get that new business in?
Yeah. I think first of all, again, back to sort of the tech aspect of it, you know, we want our borrowers to be able to get to our site and not have to talk to anyone before they're really committed to working with us, right? We want them to like us. We want them to trust us. And most importantly, we want them to see what it is they can get from us, what kind of a loan, what will they have to pay, what's the whole thing look like before they spend their time. Everyone's time is extremely valuable, ours and theirs. We want them to spend their time talking to us only when they think they have a very good, solid, you know, 80% certainty that they'd like to move forward with us. So that's first and foremost. That's what we want people to understand, is that when they want to work, you know, they want to see what they can get, what kind of a loan they can qualify for on a certain property. You know, we could give that to them within minutes. Second of all, we want to make real estate entrepreneurs more successful. And what is it that people need in that business to be more successful? You know, first and foremost, they need to find and uncover excellent projects and properties that, you know, maybe their competitors aren't finding. So we've built a tool called Flip Scout, which enables them to essentially no cost go to our website, register, and then they can search for a property in any zip code, any city or state in the United States, and find those properties. And we use some intelligence to uncover those opportunities. Right now, it's properties that are on market and they're a good fit for a short-term fix and flip. So we look through a number of different factors, but what we give to the user at the end of the day is that property location, pictures, and then we show them how much they could actually make. So within a minute, you could, you know, look up any zip code and see what properties are out there and what your ROI could be if you were to buy that property, fix and resell that. In the next couple of weeks, we're also going to have the same type of a product, but geared to a long-term real estate investor. So if you're interested in buying and holding and renting out a piece of property, we'll help you find that at no cost. I mean, so that's what we really want. You know, and they don't have to use us for a loan. They can finance it themselves, finance it anywhere else. It doesn't really matter. We just want to give these products to the community to enable the community to grow, to enable people to do more. And hopefully, you know, if they think that a loan product that we have is a good fit for them, they'll turn to us, but they certainly don't have to.
Yeah. So when it comes to building a business like yours, is this about finding as many new first time clients, or do you see that you've got a significant amount of return business and people like, I mean, is this like you find me and I'm flipping a house? You know, I mentioned that we had done an episode about this, and you know, for the life of me, I can't remember the guest name because it was quite a long time ago, but this guy had created a spreadsheet that helped you. It was kind of like Flip Scout in some ways, except for it was more about, I'd already found the property and now I want to break these things down and helping, you know, we say a lot on Startup Hustle that the things you don't know are often the most expensive. And, you know, you talk about getting yourself into it and doing stuff, but I mean, is for the growth of your business, is it, you know, like I said, this guy's product it was intended to help you more of a construction planning, you know, and help you learn, hey, this might be a little more expensive here. And it was maybe geared to help those that hadn't done it before. But in your case, is this about finding that new first time person, or are you looking for someone that's on the regular, just like consistently buying and flipping houses? I mean, obviously that wouldn't hurt, but I didn't know which type of customer are you typically seeking?
Yeah. I mean, we do have a lot of first timers that come to our, that come in and try to apply for a loan. And we love working with first-time flippers, first-time investors. You know, there's certainly, you know, the capital providers ultimately, like the institutions that finance the space more or less, are obviously more comfortable with people with experience. Though, you know, not to say that we don't exclude people with zero experience. We just have to be, I guess, more careful on what the values are and what the costs are and things like that. So we're happy to help anybody do their first project, get started right off the bat, and then build a business around it. Next time, you know, they finance it, should be much easier with us or with somebody else. Yeah. I mean, so I think it's the majority are first timers. We do have a lot of repeat business as well. I mean, we, as I said before, we finance first timers who have come back and they did a great job, come back and do another project. We've had multiple that have done multiple projects off of their first time.
So one of the things I've read lately is that with COVID and the changes in the existing business climate, it's made it a lot more difficult for banks to determine who is in fact creditworthy and who's not. Have you had to make any changes or adjustments to the current market situation to protect or mitigate risk?
We have, yeah, absolutely. So when COVID started, we essentially stopped new loan originations for a few months. So we were on virtual pause during the height of COVID. We went back and started again as we kind of saw the real estate space, not falling through the ground on us. A lot of people believed, I think people still have memories of 2008 and that crisis that lasted a number of years. And we still may see some softening in real estate pricing. It's been very, very stable. And actually, we've seen an increase overall. But we who knows, we may see some softness in pricing in the next few months. But I never thought that we're going to see a repeat of 2008. I've learned enough through experience. I'm old enough now to know that every crisis is completely different. And to say that, we have another crisis now and it's going to be just like the last one, well, that's never going to be true. So, I never thought that we're going to have a major real estate crisis. It didn't look like one because this one came from, last one was a real estate crisis. It was perpetuated through inappropriate real estate financing, high valuations, et cetera. This time it's a health crisis that kind of spilled over into an economic crisis, but it was never a real estate crisis. We're still short in supply, high in demand. America is still the best country in the world. People still want to come here to work, study, and start a family, and they need a place to live.
Yeah, and so much about the prior financial crisis was caused by, like as you mentioned, by different, completely different market conditions. Now you're in the house flipping space, and that's different. Overall, when it comes to the commercial space right now, there's some trouble there. Businesses aren't using their office space, and then some of them have become, have a lot of pressure on them because, if you own commercial real estate and you have a strip mall and it's got an anchor tenant that's a restaurant that is not driving traffic, that is not driving revenue. And there's 99 problems in a lot of that stuff. Now, you also look at certain, you're in Boston, which is not an inexpensive place to be. Rent has dropped in San Francisco for the first time in like 30 years. I'm not sure what's going on in Boston, but on the flip side, there are market corrections and conditions that often, in many cases, lead more people to buy. They say, "Oh, well, I can finally afford that because it's not skyrocketing." So it'll be interesting to see what occurs with all of that. Now, we end episodes of Startup Hustle with the founder's freestyle, and we're about to get into that. Cool. So I mentioned that we end episodes of Startup Hustle with the founder's freestyle. Kirill, you've been a successful entrepreneur and you've done a lot of different stuff outside of just house flipping in general. What's a little bit of advice that you could give to the founders or hopeful founders that are still listening?
Am I doing this to like a rap beat or something like that?
If you want, it's your freestyle. You can do whatever you want. We've come close. We found that the conversational nature of the show often leads to unresolved items. And sometimes why not end with a little bit of advice? Now, if you want to, you're in Boston. You mentioned before we recorded that's the cradle of democracy. If you want to, do it to like a Hamilton type thing. I'm going to leave that up to you, man.
Thank you. I wish I was ready for that, but I'm not. My rap skills leave a lot to be desired. Otherwise, I'd probably be in the entertainment business. Yeah. But as far as advice, I think everybody gives a lot of different advice, and there's a ton of stuff that you could do. I think everybody you're listening to this podcast, that's already great. That means you're listening to the podcast, you're learning. I've learned so much from podcasts. It's unbelievable. I've been listening to podcasts for a few years now, and I could never understand why haven't podcasts become like the new, you know, news, the new radio. Well, now finally they're becoming that. I think like in the last year or two or whatever, it's really changing. So I just say, you know, figure out who you think, you know, what company, what person, what entrepreneur inspires you. And I think inspiration is super important, because, you know, you could learn stuff, but if you're not inspired, if you don't have the passion, you know, it'll be harder. So find out what your passion is, who inspires that passion, and learn and listen all about them as much as you can.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. You know, we're in this golden age of free. I mean, there's, you know, whether it's this show or something else, you know, you got a lot of people out there putting a lot of content out that has the intention of helping you. I mean, much like I mentioned at the beginning of the show, just sitting here hoping to have a conversation that helps your business grow. And, you know, that kind of input leads to output. So, I mean, overall, I'm not going to get too verbose with that. I couldn't agree with you more. And, you know, like I said, everyone I know that has and continues to do well continues to be much like Pac-Man and just chomp, chomp, chomp when it comes to finding new knowledge. Hey, Kirill, thanks for spending some time with me. I like what you're doing. For those of you listening, go check it out. Click the link in the show notes. I'll see you next time, bud.
Thanks, brother.
Yep.
Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time.